The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower and Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest today is a return guest. Hadn't been here for a while, but that's my fault, not his. Lee Fredrickson of Hinge Marketing. Lee, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you back. For those who may not know you, give me a little background on Lee and Hinge Marketing, please.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm a psychologist by training, a behavioral psychologist who got involved in marketing a number of years ago. And my career has really been focused on what I think is the most challenging kind of marketing you can do, and that's marketing professional services. So Hinge is a branding and marketing firm focused exclusively on the professional services.
Your client base traditionally has been professional services. Some AEC or significantly
architecture,
AEC.
Architecture, engineering and construction, accounting and financial services, technology services, management consulting. Those are kind of the big categories. And a chunk of those have always been government contractors.
Okay.
That's always been interesting across basically all of the different verticals.
Okay. Now, for those who are not familiar with it, first of all, you can find out about Hinge at Hinge, H-I-N-G-E, hingemarketing.com. You guys have produced a number of books over the years. Probably my favorite is Visible Expert, The Visible Expert.
Thank you.
Before we get into this study, explain that one a little bit, please.
Yeah. What we have done is we've taken the approach of everything we do is driven by research. So we do original research on professional services. And one of the things that we've learned over the years is that expertise is really the center of what you're selling in professional services. It's how people choose firms. And yeah, relationship is important. Those things are important. But it all gets down to expertise. And what the Visible Expert does is it really recognizes that expertise is invisible. You can't see how much a person knows by looking at them. And the only way you can find out is making that visible. That's through everything from social media to speaking engagements to blogging to articles, all of those things you do that make the expertise visible to the outside world.
Adding value in a public forum.
That's right.
Regardless of the forum.
You add value. It's like the little lady at the end of the supermarket aisle who has the little toothpicks or the little cups to pass here. Would you like a sample of this? That's what you're doing with your expertise.
I don't know if you've run across this before, but you know, I've had some visibility in the market for a few years, a while, let's say. But every now and again, I'll have somebody come up and say, I can do what you do. And I just kind of smile and say, go for it.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yes.
On rare occasion, they do. And on a couple of occasions, a couple have succeeded. But for the most part, they aren't willing to put in the work that it takes to attain the visibility and the credibility that comes with that adding value.
You're absolutely right, Mark. I mean, the biggest question we often get about visible expertise is, well, isn't that just like the person who gets up and brags about all they know and so on and so forth? No, that's not. That's like the opposite of visible expertise.
We both know a few of those.
Yeah. The empty suits of the world. What it really is if you know things and you can convey value by sharing some of your knowledge, some of your information, you're giving people a sample of that. You're showing them the kind of value that you can convey and the kind of things that you know you can do. It's a perfectly natural way to market professional services, and I think it's really the way to get the most impact of your expertise.
You know, the other value I see in this, I've been writing for the government market. I think my first article came out in 88. My first newsletter came out probably 90 or 91.
Mm-hmm.
I have most of that stuff in my library because the first ones were hard copy newsletters.
Right.
So
there was a reason they were called letters.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you have the intellectual capital back then. You can go back and see how your ideas have evolved, whether or not you were right about fads or trends or growth of market share. And I like to go back and see that stuff because it's amazing how frequently I was right and occasionally how embarrassingly I was wrong.
Keeps one humble.
it gives us a perspective on the markets that we serve that not many others have, because if you don't write it down, you can remember it any damn way you want.
You are always right.
There you go. So briefly, in the last couple minutes of the first segment here, tell me about this. We're here today to discuss Lee's most recent study, the 2017 Government Services Research Marketing and Growth Insights. And to show you how important this was to me, I got this 36 hours ago, and he's in the studio now. So obviously I liked it. So what precipitated this?
Well, what we've done, Mark, is each year we take a look at overall professional services at a lot of different segments with the emphasis on high growth. What is it that helps firms grow fast? What are firms that are growing in over 20% a year, compounded growth, what do they do differently than average growth firms? Now, as you do that over time, you find out there's other questions that arise, other perspectives, and that always comes from people asking questions. Well, what about this? And one of the persistent things we saw is the difference in different size firms and the kind of marketing they use, the kinds of strategies they use. So we wanted to take a deep dive in that this time. So we looked at small firms versus large firms, and in terms of what different kinds of strategies they're using, what marketing techniques, so on and so forth. And then we've looked at that and how that relates to growth as well. What are the kinds of techniques that tend to work best? And so this is a deep dive segment into the government contracting element of professional services.
Okay. And the study encompassed well over 400 companies.
Yep.
Just so you know, folks, the small business side is not segmented into set-asides. This is the first report from Hinge on this topic. So if you want deeper research, call them. Give me the, you have the summary page here, the key takeaways. You can touch on that for just a second before we take a break.
So. Sure. I think one of the interesting things is how much different the two segments are in terms of what they do and what they use. And one of the bottom lines for me, the interesting things, is that small firms tend to be either more successful or less successful than the large firms. Large firms are much more in the middle level of success. So you, in the small firm category, you have the opportunity to be much more successful or to do more of a belly flop. And what causes those two things to happen, I think, is very, very interesting.
So is that perhaps the turning the aircraft carrier kind of mode versus obviously smaller vessels?
Yeah, turning the aircraft carrier, a regression to the mean. You accumulate enough segments and eventually you just resemble the overall market as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a loss of differentiation is what it is, a loss of being special.
Okay, cool. Well, we're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Lee and I shall return after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Lee Fredrickson, managing partner of Hinge Marketing, hingemarketing.com. We're talking about Lee's Government Services Research 2017 Marketing and Growth Insights. So particularly for you small businesses out there, and anybody listening really, go to hingemarketing.com, click on the resources button, look for the research reports. It's there, it's free, it's downloadable. It's only like 25, 26 pages. But again, it's extremely valuable information. So we're going to go through this actually page by page, but you'll still need the hard copy in your library. So unless you can write really fast. First of all, the sampling, 445 companies. How'd you find these bad boys?
Well, we use a variety of different approaches. We've built up a database of over 20,000 professional services firms that we go directly. And then we have research partners, different organizations or associations that help distribute the survey. So we get a pretty good cross-section of the industries. And in this particular sample we're talking about here, we're talking about almost $70 billion worth of revenue represented in this sale. So it's a pretty substantial amount of dollars here that are represented in the sample.
And that's on the government side or the total revenue side for the companies?
That's the total revenue of these firms.
Yeah. Okay. Before we proceed, this is a professional services firm study, so it doesn't necessarily, some of the stuff, it does apply to other categories in the market, resellers, channel players, prime subs, whatever. But define what you mean by professional services, please.
Right. So our professional services are primarily in four verticals. One of them is architectures, engineers, and construction. The whole building, if you will.
The AEC community.
The AEC community, that's right. Next is management consulting, management consultants of all kinds, from strategy to human resources to operational improvement. The third category is technology. Primarily, we're talking technology services here as opposed to technology manufacturers. They're not, and often they have some kind of combination of hardware, software services, that kind of thing go together often. Accounting and financial services is the other one. And then we also have a smattering of legal, marketing, and communications companies, that sort of thing, that do federal work.
Okay, cool. So your methodology, you have the sample of these companies, 31%, almost 31.5% large.
Yeah.
Anybody that doesn't fit the SBA designation is large.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So it's the SBA designation applied to the industry verticals.
Okay. So in some circles, we have the mid-tiers, the smaller mid-tiers, the larger mid-tiers, and then the mega primes, you know, the
right.
GDITs of the world, if you will. But for practical purposes, you know, small business versus large business is how the government operates.
Right.
So you know, one of the interesting things early in the study is the ratio of employees to marketing personnel.
Isn't it? Isn't it? Very different, very different. So in a small company, for example, you have one marketing person to every 20 individuals in the firm.
That's a strong ratio.
It is a strong ratio. And in the large ones, you have it one to every 50. So it's 2.5 times less dense, if you will,
okay.
Much less. And that's an interesting thing because you may recall in some of the prior studies, one of the things we found very consistently is the marketing budgets of high growth firms aren't any larger. They don't spend more dollars, but what they do spend is more effort. People time in marketing and not dollars.
Right.
So that's one of the big takeaways from
this. It's still an expenditure, though.
It is. You betcha it's still an expenditure. Not free. It's a different kind of expenditure, though. And it's in a professional services firm, of course, it's the most precious thing you have is time is all you have.
Right.
So you're putting your precious time towards your marketing and they're doing more of it.
Okay. Now, one of the things experientially that I found over the years is that although smaller companies do have marketing people, they tend to be at a much lower level than those employed by the mid-tiers or the primes, any of the businesses you're categorizing as large. So there's a marketing sophistication level there, and the gap can be big.
Yeah, it can be. And I'll tell you, the thing that's really different about it if you think of marketing as there's two varieties of it. There's execution or implementation. It's setting up the event. It's getting something printed. It's doing the implementation of it. And there's the development of the strategy. What is your marketing approach? Who are you going after? How are you going to make yourself different? And I think the big difference between success and failure is, do you have both of those covered, or do you only have one of them covered? And that's where we see so many firms stumble, is they just focus on the implementation. You know, have somebody, an administrative support person, somebody who can implement my ideas, but the ideas themselves, the strategies, aren't benefiting from the kind of sophisticated strategy development and marketing analysis that's available. It's out there. It's easy to, you know, I don't want to say it's easy to do, but it's easy to find it. It exists.
Yeah. Okay. So anything else about the ratios there you want to touch on?
I think that the key thing here is to understand is when you look deeper at how they're using those extra people, it's not just that they have more people running around, it's they're doing different things. And what they're doing goes back to the first segment where you asked about expertise, visible expertise. That, I think, is the thing that makes a difference, is these people are engaged in making the expertise that's present in that firm, making that visible
defining
to the potential client. Defining, focusing, making it visible.
Right. Yeah, and we'll touch on how to define it shortly. So in the study, the categories by the contractor categories by industry, can you touch on that for a moment so we can get a good feel here?
Sure. The biggest single category is in the AEC community. That represents almost 25% of the sample. Another almost 20%, 19.7%, is management consultants. And another 19% is the technology services. And another just about 15% is accounting and financial services. And then marketing, communications, and the legal, they take up about the remaining 5% with a few miscellaneous educational-oriented, health-oriented filling out, rounding it out.
And for practical purposes, government contractors do business around the world. The vast majority of the contracting done is in North America, but it's by no means the entire scope.
No, indeed not. I mean, the small contractors, about two-thirds of them say they're doing work in North America, but you know, you have another 17% doing work in Europe, 18% in the Pacific, Australia, New Zealand kind of area. And with large contractors, it's pretty similar, although it's just more of them. More of them do business in North America, over 80%, over 36% in Asia and India area. Europe, about a quarter of them do business there. So a lot of these larger ones would be comfortably fit into more of the global kind of firm category, which is exactly what you'd expect.
Yeah. Now, for the majority of companies I work with, they are primarily, if not exclusively, focused on the government market. Because of some of the work that you've previously done, what's the breakdown here with your study participants?
Interesting that about 15% of them are primarily government contractors, over 50%, and often that over 50% is 90% or 85%, something like that. But about 85% of the sample are folks that are doing less than 50% of their business with the government. So you have an awful lot of these hybrids, and I don't want to say that it's a hobby or a sideline, but it's not all of what they do by any stretch of the imagination.
No, and the larger companies, as well as the larger small companies, need that diversification, because if we're on a perpetual continuing resolution, which basically we've been on since 94.
And that was last century.
Yeah. last millennia.
Yeah.
That diversification is necessary, and I've worked with companies that want to migrate more to an even balance, too. So although that may seem like an anomaly, from the research that I've read of Lee's and done on my own, a lot of what we're going to talk about here, especially when we get into strategy, is across the board.
That's right.
So, let's talk a little bit about the financial, and then we'll take a break and get into strategy.
Okay. Well, one of the interesting thing that I mentioned in the opening section is how they break down between high growth, average growth, and low growth. And just to reiterate, high growth is growing at a compound growth rate of at least 20% a year. And we look at a three-year period. So these are successful, growing, repeatedly growing firms, aggressive growth. The no growth is what it sounds. They aren't growing or they're shrinking. And then everything else is what we're calling average growth. Now, interestingly, in the large contractor group, 75% of them are average growth, right around the middle. And you have little less than 15% are high growth. Now, that's a lot of revenue. That's a lot of 15% of them. And you have about another 10% that are no growth. So the bulk of them, 75%, are sitting in the middle. Now, when you go over to the small growth or the smaller firms, what you find is that less than half are in the middle. So it's 3/4 versus 48% are in the middle. And the smaller ones tend to distribute themselves either no growth, there are 18%, or almost twice as many of them don't grow, small firms, as large firms. But the really interesting thing is in the high growth, you have 33% of them, 33.5%, are high growth, over 20% year after year.
Which is more than twice the large companies.
More than twice, yeah. So if you are a small growth firm, probably the headline is you have a lot of opportunity, but you also have a lot of risk.
Yeah, and keep in mind that this is a three-year combined aggregate, not just a last 6 months
right.
snapshot.
That's not that one contract you won 6 months ago.
Yeah. One more slide to touch on briefly here, and we'll take a break. How do the contractors compare to other professional services firms?
Well, I think not too surprisingly, they're sort of in the middle of the growth, an overall average growth of around 10%. And that's very similar to what AEC as a whole, accounting as a whole, their growth rate. Now, the ones that outgrow the government contractors are both the technology, which again, you know, people kind of expect technology, high growth. But the consulting, I think, is an eye-opener. 18% growth.
And that's the leader in the category.
That is the leader, the growth leader, the consulting.
Cool. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower, off-center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm here with Lee Fredrickson. You can find this study at hingemarketing.com. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. Nobody else volunteered, which is okay by me. And I'm here with Lee Fredrickson. Nobody volunteered to be Lee except Lee, which is certainly okay by me and him. So next part of this study is it is my favorite part, the strategy, section two. Let's start with a specialization, please.
Yes. Very interesting, because specialization has for a long time been something we've consistently found is one of the things that really helps a professional services firm. I mean, if you try to be all things to everyone, you end up being nothing to anyone.
Right.
And so that is the key. And of course, it is a real, very frequent malady in professional services firms, because your clients always ask, if you do a good job, they ask you to do more. And more in slightly different, and then quite a bit different. And then before you know it, you're doing something completely different than when you started, because you did a good job at what you did before.
Right. And if you're small enough to need the revenue, you're likely to take that. But is it going to help in your overall growth?
Right.
Possibly not.
Exactly. And so it can have the opposite effect of that.
Yeah.
And that's what we find in the whole strategy thing. We looked at what do they focus on to specialize. But first of all, the smaller firms are more likely to be specialized. And that makes sense. You would expect that if you're a smaller firm, you have a greater need to be specialized. But it isn't given, and it isn't written, that you have to be specialized. So it's a choice. you can make. And we find
frankly, most small companies don't make the right choice.
Right, right. And I think most large companies actually don't make the right choice, because it seems like there's almost a knee-jerk reaction that if I want to grow more, I need to add more services, more markets, that's the way to grow, that is safer, the diversification is safer. And I don't think it really is safer. It is a risky proposition, because what you're doing is taking away all the reasons that someone would want to do business with you. And why do you want to do business with a professional services firm? Usually because it's solving a problem for you. So the specialization, if you think about it that way, is what's the problems that I'm solving for someone? What kinds of problems can people reliably come to me and I can help them solve?
Okay. So five areas you have here.
Right. So one of them is a focus on solving particular challenges. What kinds of problems do I solve? I solve problems that require a fraud investigation at the highest levels, for example. That would be a kind of a problem, a focus on a kind of a problem.
Fraud, waste, and abuse is huge in the market.
Yep, it is indeed. And if you can specialize in doing that and you have a methodology for doing that and you have a track record of doing that and the people who work with you are known for doing that, you've got yourself a specialization.
Yep.
Now, there are some things that don't work particularly well as specializations, and those tend to be geographic specializations. Sometimes it can, you know, if you specialize in working in a particular region of the world no one else works in, that could work. But by and large, geographic specializations tend to not be, because geography is collapsing. It's becoming less and less important for professional services firms. So the first one, as I said, is solving a particular kind of challenge. Here, more small contractors tend to specialize in that than large contractors. The second one is a particular specialized service. So we don't focus on the problem. Instead, we do this type of a service. We do inbound telemarketing, customer support. That's what we specialized in, for an example. That would be an example of that kind of specialization.
Okay.
The third kind is industry specialization. Which sort of industries do we work with?
Transportation, energy.
Transportation. we work with all of the security agencies. We work only with the Army, whatever. And then you have on helping a particular role in that. Our focus is on helping the procurement department, or our focus is on helping the CIOs. Only the CIOs within an organization. And that can be an effective type of specialization.
Yeah. The geographic, I've only seen come into play on rare occasion. You know, the OCONUS operation certainly comes into play. But only once have I heard a major contractor, Ed Swallow, then at Northrop Grumman, head of ALL-BD, said, on rare occasion, if a subcontractor has a geographic location in the U.S. and we need a physical presence there and we don't have one, they'll be our partner.
Right.
But that's like one time in the last 35 years I've heard this.
Yeah, yeah. It exactly, as I said, the government is becoming global, and that's where they're looking for help.
Okay. Now, you indicate that the firms that grow more, and this is not a surprise, do more research perhaps than those that don't.
Indeed, they do. It's one of those things. If there's one thing you can predict you're going to hear from somebody when you bring up the topic of research, it's that we know our clients. We work with them every day, all day long. We really understand our clients. Yet the firms that do actual research on their client base grow faster and are more profitable. So it's, you think you know your clients. You certainly know a lot about your clients, but the problem is you don't know what you don't know.
Well, particularly in the situation we find ourselves now, where there's a new administration, new policy, new players, and your knowledge base is still going to be important, but it will change radically over the next 3 months to 3.5 years.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and part of it is we're humans, you know, so we are overly influenced by the last person we hear and the loudest person we hear.
What?
So, so if some, you know, if somebody makes a big issue, you lost a contract for a particular reason, all of a sudden that reason grows in your head to that's the reason you're losing all your contracts, when that may be the only reason you'll ever lose a contract like that again, and it's because of something that they didn't even tell you.
Yeah.
They told you you lost it for this reason, but you actually lost it for quite a different reason.
But so on the research side, break it down.
The kinds of things that we find is that it's the frequency of the research. If you don't do any of it, of course, you have the slowest growth rate.
If any.
Yeah, if any. The ones who do it occasionally, like once a year or something, they benefit. They grow faster. But the ones who are really doing the fastest growth, the most profitable, are the ones that are doing it at least quarterly. So in other words, they're almost continuously researching some aspect of your database. Some of the clever ones have developed ways of continuously gathering data on breaking events with it. Some of them have do periodic studies on some aspect of it. And that's really the way you reduce risk. You know, we think of reducing risk in your marketplace by diversifying. That's the traditional way of thinking you reduce risk. But really, I think in the professional services, the way you reduce risk is by anticipating, looking where the market is now, where it's going, on the actual reality of it, not what someone told you at a cocktail party the other day, but the reality of where the market is headed.
The Gretzky effect.
Yep, exactly.
Skate to where the puck's going, not to where it was.
Yep.
And you know, that's such an issue with so many companies, legacy systems. Yeah, well, that's our business. We keep supporting them. And they're going to be with us for a while, but not forever.
Right, right.
So,
you know, and that's the hardest thing to do, especially if you're already successful or if you've had some level of success. You know, you can tell yourself, gee, we're a large firm. We've been so successful for so long. We must be really smart.
Okay. So your basic takeaway on the research side is?
If you're not doing it, you're skating on thin ice.
And how frequently should you do it?
At least yearly, preferably once a quarter.
Okay. But, you know, quarterly or twice a year is optimal. So before we get into our next topic, subsection of strategy, which is called differentiation, we're going to take our last break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. When we come back, Lee and I will be taking a deep dive into differentiation and the rest of the report. Back after these. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here today with Lee Fredrickson of Hinge Marketing. We're talking about Lee's 2017 Government Services Research Marketing Study, Marketing and Growth Insights. And you can find it at hingemarketing.com. Click on the resources, click on research. So next item on the agenda here is probably, it's my favorite, and I know it's one of your specialties, and that's differentiation.
Yes, it's what makes you different. And, you know, the interesting thing is, if everybody says it, it's not different. You know, what makes me different is I'm a human, you know. And for some of the differentiators, that's almost what you see. They're so frequent. So you take something like our culture. In large companies, 57% of people say our culture sets us apart. That doesn't seem to make sense, does
well,
it?
You know, your culture can be a little dish in the back of the refrigerator that's growing mold.
So, you know, there's a big difference between what you think sets you apart and what's important to your prospective clients. That's the important thing to take away. Now, you take a differentiator like we mentioned the one about our culture. Another one is very, very frequent is our reputation in the marketplace. We've got a great reputation. We do good work. Well, of course, the reality is if you have a bad reputation, it's not going to be long and you're going to be out of business. So, yeah, if you have a great reputation, you should have a great reputation. That's what it takes to be in business, to have a reputation. But so, you know, and the way that, that I always say to tell whether you have a true differentiator, does anyone ever say the opposite? You know, does anyone ever say we have a bad reputation in the marketplace?
I've never had anybody call and tell me they had a bad product they need marketed.
Yeah, exactly. So if no one says the opposite, you got to have a little suspicion about whether or not that's actually a good differentiator.
Right.
That's right.
I try not to reference my reputation in the market, because if they're calling me, I'm assuming they're calling me because they heard of me.
Right. Exactly. So the another one that we think is very interesting is the history of our firm. You know, people sit around the conference room table and say, gee, well, we've been in business for 80 years or 100 years. That must mean something. And it does to you internally, but it doesn't necessarily mean much to the outside world. That's the one, what's the one differentiator that more low-growth companies have than high-growth companies? More low-growth companies fall back on their history and their reputation as a in general than high-growth companies. High-growth companies, they're much more likely to go with their use of technology, how they've integrated technology with services. They're more likely to grow with how they've taken the different approach to marketing and business development. Those are things that are more likely to be a high growth. And you see the differences here in the report between the larger firms and the smaller firms, how they go about differentiating themselves in different ways.
Okay.
The larger firms much more likely to rely on the culture. They're both likely to rely on their general reputation in the marketplace. That doesn't distinguish them. Whereas the smaller firms are more likely to talk about awards, where they're located, and things along the lines of the industries they target or the business model they use. All of those things tend to be favored by smaller firms, or excuse me, larger firms. I misspoke there.
Okay, but you know, I've seen the processes, the business model, try to be leveraged by smaller firms. It seems to me for them that's more of an uphill battle.
It is, unless they have a, you know, kind of a contrarian business model that does it the way that's different than everybody else. In other words, if services are primarily sold on an hour basis, per hour, you're selling hours of time, and your business model is delivering a completed product or a completed project, that can be a good example of a different business model.
Okay.
And it could be used by either one.
Which differentiators are favored by smalls?
The smaller ones don't have as many differentiators that they favor. They tend to have a commitment to results, tends to be one that they tend to do more. Specialize in the specialized services or a value proposition. We offer more value. The use of technology or the processes that they do. So those tend to be the ones that are favored by smaller firms. So if you look at this, and the thing about a differentiator is there's no differentiator that's always right or always wrong. You know, it has to be true. You can't just make it up. And, of course, the problem with some of these, even if they're true, you can't prove them. So if you say we have a greater commitment to producing results, how do you prove it? How do you tell that to someone? I have a greater commitment than all the other competitors.
We have also 100, we put in 100% effort.
110%. No, we do 200% effort.
Yeah.
So it's very hard. And that's the stumbling block with these. It has to be, not only has true, it has to be something that you can prove. And importantly, it has to be relevant during the buying process.
Right.
In other words, it has to be part of what people are actually looking at in terms of the buying process.
And it has to address the problem of the particular client. So it may not be fits all.
That's right. Right. Different clients have different needs.
Yeah.
Some of them may be, you know, particularly driven by a value. you have a different way of creating value that allows you to create it more economically. That could drive some. But others may be driven by a particular kind of problem they have to solve that they don't know how to solve that.
Okay.
So that's why those kinds of very specific ones that are that can be very related to that situation tend to be more powerful.
Okay. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I want to get to the marketing side of this as well. So walk us through the most impactful marketing techniques for government contractors.
This is really interesting stuff because we get depending on the size firm you are, you think different things are more impactful for you, which is very, very interesting. So if you take first the large corporations, the big three there where they see more value than the small corporations are public relations, memberships in professional associations, and downloadable educational content. Those are the big three for the larger contract. But the smaller firms have a different set of ones where they get the biggest impact. They get the impact from speaking engagements, attending conferences and trade shows, online advertising, partnership marketing, and their websites. So they actually have a larger group of ones where they get more impact than the larger firms. They have, and so it's a different way of marketing. It's less public relations and broader things and more focused speaking engagements. And if you look through these things, what you see in common is almost all of them are great ways of conveying your expertise.
Right. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here. You can find Lee's study at hingemarketing.com. Click on the resources button, then look for the research and look for the 2017 government services research. I wish we had another half hour or so, Lee, but we don't. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I appreciate it.
And it won't be as long to get you back next time.
There you go.
There you go. This is not my day job. Since 1985, I've advised literally thousands of companies on their marketing strategy. Many have gone on to become market leaders. So if you need an overview, somebody to look over your shoulder at your marketing program, I can help you do that. I can also help you build your marketing strategy literally from the ground up. I'm not an ad agency. I'm not going to do some of the things that Lee does, but I can advise you on this. And if you need outside resources beyond me, I can certainly aim you at what I consider to be the best in the market. If this is appealing, drop me a line at markamtower@gmail.com. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.